Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 27th of December. And I'm recording at 9 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, I'd like to say a very happy Christmas and also seasonal greetings to all of our subscribers. I hope you've had a great holiday break so far, and I hope you're also listening, looking forward to the new year as well. Okay, before we take a look at the medium to longer term, let's just have a quick assessment of what's happened here recently, not least for stock markets. And with that incredibly powerful tailwind from quantitative easing, or its various forms under other names in countries, the countries that have benefited from that have done exceptionally well, and they have been led not in terms of overall performance, but in terms of impact and influence by the U.S. stock market. And as of this week's close, and Wall Street's gone out just down a fraction here on the close, so most of the gains intact. We've seen breakouts from another upside trading range. The chart pattern is amazingly consistent. It is overextended, as we all know. There are some quite speculative elements, not least in fashionable technology shares overall, and a move such as we are seeing, and such as we've seen really throughout the fourth quarter of this year, is really unsustainable beyond the medium term. And so one of my expectations would be, well, don't preempt the end of this move, because the chart will remain rivetingly consistent. It's a staircase step sequence upward trend, as I've described it previously in these broadcasts. And the steps are the sideways activity. The trading ranges within the steps is now about 4 to 5 weeks. And watch for the possible additional upward acceleration as one prospect, but signs of a change in demand momentum would be a upside breakout such as we've seen this week, which then fails, and then the prices come back and take out the lower side of those 4 to 5 week trading ranges. In other words, the action will look quite different on charts that are as consistent as these have been, with one step above another. And I think that it would be surprising if we didn't see some choppy action in the first quarter for Wall Street and other leaders. There are plenty of investors who are now saying that that won't happen until considerably later in the year, but that's quite possibly wishful thinking overall. I don't think it's going to become more choppy because suddenly the news turns negative, but there are a number of things that can affect sentiment. As you know, that's always the case. Maybe the buyers have had enough, take more profits. Maybe the short term, not the short term, maybe the medium term interest rates, such as the U.S. 10-year yield, which has pushed above 3% in here today. I've been mentioning that in every one of my broadcasts. Maybe that unnerves investors, or some other extraneous event influences sentiment. But I think that the easy forecast to make is that we're unlikely to see a repeat of 2013 and 2014 for the USA. But it's got, I think, possibly an even better chance of being an up year than a down year. But what we can expect is that missing 10% correction we haven't seen really for quite some time, and particularly in response to rises in those medium-term interest rates, it's likely to create the more choppy environment that I have a forecast and that we have seen for most stock markets, but certainly not Wall Street. I think the second most interesting group of markets here. Well, I think no, I'm going to upgrade it beyond that. I think the European markets remain extremely interesting. Yes, the European economic recovery is only in its incipient stages. Yes, there are plenty of the same old problems of too much bureaucracy and interference in the overall marketplace, or I should put it this way, interference that prevents the smooth functioning of the marketplace. But these shares are cheap. The tailwind, a monetary tailwind, is very positive, and there isn't going to be any tapering in Europe anytime soon. India, which I've often mentioned here in the last few months, has become extremely interesting because of the next general election, which has to be held within 6 months. The stock market is giving a favorable discount to that election result. In other words, they're expecting the BJP party to win, led by Narendra Modi, and it's not far off its overall highs here right now. I think if Modi does win with a workable majority, that India will be one of the top performers next year, and possibly quite possibly for several years. China looks well. When every time I mention that, I think I'm saying, the perennial recovery candidate, and it hasn't happened yet. Interestingly, we had a good upward dynamic here today, near the low of 2 months ago, but that's just one indication of support coming in within a broad trading range, but the valuations are attractive, and my overall view here is that the global economy is gradually doing better. That's in line with the it takes at least 5 years after a credit crisis recession before you get back to anything approaching normal. And as you know, we are approaching that first five-year period. That doesn't mean that all the problems are behind us and that the markets are all going to go roaring up again. I don't think that will happen. And certainly not all the problems are behind us, but I'll put it this way. We are not seeing the U.S. and other leading economies falling into what was described as a risk of a Japanese-style deflationary cycle. I mean, have a look at the U.S. auction markets, have a look at the U.S. stock market overall. We see really just signs of recovery. And yes, they're led by the wealthier sections of the economy and market. But that's always the case. And to use that much derived term, there is a trickle-down effect that moves through the economy as well. But I think the key point here is what I just mentioned, is that we're not seeing a disinflationary, deflationary slump. We're seeing a gradual recovery which is spreading, and I think we'll continue. And I think that the positive overall global monetary tailwind will be generally favorable for stock markets, but don't expect another 29% gain by the S&P, let alone another 37.5% gain for the Nasdaq composite index in 2014. But Europe, which has also seen some pretty stellar gains here this year, German DAX index up 31%. They're coming off lower levels than we see in Wall Street, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get another good year, as I've mentioned already in this broadcast. And then Japan, which is up nearly 28.5% in US dollar terms and up 55.5% in Japanese yen terms. I remain a believer. I've liked that market all year. It's one of the best prospects, and I think it will remain so going forward. So lots of interesting situations, and there are some markets that I would be cautious of here. The ASEAN markets, which had dominated all the early years of this global bull run that we've seen since at least the first quarter 2009, and for the ASEAN markets that I'm about to mention, it started in the fourth quarter of 2008. But Thailand, Indonesia, the Philippines, well, I think they're probably going to see several years of retrenchment and ranging here overall, just because they did run ahead of themselves and had such terrific gains overall. I think another interesting sector is in the mining shares, which had lagged, and they are classically cyclical. Cyclical group, although while we had the commodity super cycle, they broke out of that and began to behave more like growth shares before reverting really from 2008 onwards right back to their overall cyclical performances. But they are attractively valued right now. About at least half the price of Wall Street's leaders, and I think that also we are seeing the fundamental changes in terms of cutbacks in supply, some mines actually closing or closing their less profitable branches or veins, and we have seen some of these companies just streamline themselves a little bit and shed some of their less profitable or more risky divisions. And the mining sector is a classic, along with other cyclicals, is a classic performer in the latter stages of bull market runs. So I think that'll be interesting. That sector of mining shares will be interesting next year. And overall, I don't think there's anything for investors to be really terrified about. I think that there will be plenty of interesting opportunities. I feel certainly quite confident about that. But now back to the markets. If there's one area that might unnerve investors, I would say it's likely to be the government bond sector and just global bond markets in general. I mentioned at the beginning of this broadcast that we had seen the U.S. 10-year government bond yield push above its September high, just over 3% here today. I've said in previous broadcasts that I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see it range a bit around this 3% level, as often takes place at important resistance levels. Also, I think we will have the Fed doing its best to at least slow the rise here overall. But I do think it's going to go higher, and I think there's a real possibility that we could see 4%, even 4.5% on this 10-year yield next year. How the market actually takes this is anyone's guess, but and those guesses will range really from people will say, well, it's fine because it's normalization and you'd expect higher interest rates when the economy is looking healthier. Then there are others who will say, well, no, actually, this is not going to be good for the US property market, and therefore it's not going to be that good for the US consumer overall, and that the stock market might well take fright. I think there are merits to both those arguments, but I think that the best factor from higher yields, government bond yields, is that some of that money trickles out of the bonds and into the stock market, providing additional support. But ultimately, eventually, it does become an important headwind overall. And I don't see any reason why it would be any different this time. Incidentally, Owen's reviewed the sector here today, and you want to also look at things like UK gilts, 10-year gilts. Those hit a new high for the year, just as the US 10-year treasuries are. The German Bunds, which were the classic safe haven within Europe, those yields are also moving higher. They haven't moved to, or they haven't taken out the year's earlier high, so they're lagging a little bit behind the UK gilts and the US 10-year. But they had a big upside day today, and the whole pattern looks basey, just as we see with treasuries and also with gilts. Now, on a longer term basis, and I'm talking about towards the end of this decade, and I'm quite possibly well, I think almost certainly beyond. There are some factors that I think could well fuel the next secular bull market that I've been talking about. And you remember that last secular bull market, the boundaries there, that really started in about 1982, and it ran on pretty well close to the end of the last century. And why would the next one start in the next few years? Well, first, we're recovering from what's been this very difficult situation so far this century, with the end of the last secular bull market, the fallout from that, and all the excesses that had built up during that secular bull market, and then the credit crisis recession that we saw. So there have certainly been a lot of reaction and consolidate factors, to put it to put it mildly. But the I think the three or four key reasons for why we would get another secular bull market, and veteran subscribers and listeners to these audio Friday audios will be familiar with them. They are what I have long described as an accelerated rate of technological innovation. That's fantastic news for corporations, particularly the big corporations that are able to make the best uses of it. And it's not just in desktop publishing and somewhat faster computers all around. It's the industrialization of the internet, as I've described before. It's sensors within large machines, making them vastly more efficient. It's everything. It's including graphene. I don't need to run through the list of it all, but this is a very exciting era in terms of technology, and the big corporations are the primary beneficiaries of it. The other one, which has been a NFT money forecast in recent years, is that we would see lower energy prices in real terms. Metaphorically speaking, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed on that to a certain extent. There's no doubt about the ability to achieve those lower energy prices. Just look at what the US has done. But other countries around the world have been slow to follow that lead, and citing well, it ranges from everything from within Europe, for instance. There's a big green lobby, and the embarrassment of officials who have been sympathetic to that lobby to have spent all this money on renewables, which don't quite do the job as effectively as companies which need a constant supply, and households that, of course, want and need constant supply of power, would hope for. And they're worried that if they allow fracking, that it will cause prices to fall sufficiently to expose the overly optimistic, I put it that way, developmental plans that they had for some of those renewable industries. And then, of course, there are also the arguments on coming from Greens about wanting fewer CO2 emissions. Well, understandably. And I think that the example I've often cited is that the production of natural gas, in particular, with the help of fracking, is lowering those CO2 emissions in the U.S. and some other countries. And also, my feeling is that technology is the best way to deal with the CO problems or any other environmental problems that we have in the years and decades ahead of us. But so lower energy prices, but they won't be, well, that certainly today they aren't equally low around the globe, but my launch time, or a time when I feel that the secular bull market is likely to be quite apparent, it's before the end of this decade, as I've said in the past, and I will stick with that. And I think there'll be a lot more fracking around the globe, and energy prices will be lower as a consequence, in other words, inflation-adjusted terms, as a consequence of that. The other is a longer-term theme, but it's basically the triumph of capitalism in terms of economic principles, guiding economic principles, whether it's democratically led capitalism or free market capitalism, or whether it's command capitalism, as we see in China and some other states. But there's no doubt that capitalism certainly has triumphed over a communist system of economic management, such as we used to see in China under Mao, and such as we saw in the Soviet Union for so many years, and that India, heaven forfend, actually tried to introduce. And basically, it works better than the other system. That's capitalism, obviously. And it's spreading, and we have seen wealth creation around the globe. One of the big stories that Fuller Money has talked about in recent years has been the rise and rise of the global middle class. And that's a big story for the next secular bull market, not least because when the last secular bull market started, we were really talking about the United States, Canada, Australia, Europe, Japan, and some little countries in the Asian region. And now, really, you can practically count on one hand the countries that are still holding out and refusing to go down a more capitalist, the path of a more capitalist economic model. So those are hugely powerful factors here that I think could well create a secular bull market overall. But we're going to have some turbulence before all that takes place. Turbulence is not a euphemism for bear markets. I think bear markets will be the exception, and they will usually be due to problems of governance, more likely than anything else. They'll be isolated. I certainly don't expect any major bear markets such as 2000 and 2008. I do not expect anything like that over the next few years. I've said that for a number of years now, following the 2008, because two huge setbacks like that don't increase the possibility of a third one occurring. They actually reduce it. Okay, what else to look at here? I think in terms of long-dated government bonds, it's a bear trend. So I've already said that, and I think it's just a question of how fast yields move higher. Hopefully not too fast. I don't think growth will be strong enough for it to occur, for them to move up too quickly. That would require really synchronized global economic growth, which would push inflation pressures higher. That will happen at some stage, but I don't think it'll happen in 2014, although we may see inflation raise its head a little bit more than we've seen this year in 2014. That wouldn't surprise me, but I think it'll take somewhat longer here overall. Now, in terms of but it's a bad story for government bonds here overall, as you'll be well aware. I think it probably is a bull story for the resources markets generally. We have to be careful in generalizing about the resources markets because the weather factors are such a huge influence on agricultural commodities, and we had the 7 biblical years of disastrous growing conditions prior to 2013, which has been quite a good year for crops overall. Hopefully that carries on into 2014 and beyond. And there's a reasonable chance that it could. And to the extent that you think that there's a bit of global warming out there, and I've got at least one foot in that camp, then a little bit of global warming, provided there isn't too much turbulence, a little bit of extra rain and a little bit of additional warmth around the globe, that can help crops as much or more than it inhibits crops. But of course, it all depends on the quantities seen and in the growing locations. So I can't really dwell on that. I think industrial metals, which I've already mentioned earlier on in this broadcast, I think those prices will be moving somewhat higher. What about the precious metals? Well, They're still on overall downtrends. They're still only slightly above their June lows. So it's all for the bulls to prove. But they haven't broken decisively down below those June lows. All they've done is test it with gold and platinum doing the testing, silver holding a little bit above those lows, and palladium holding well above those lows. It's an interesting sector. I'm not sure. We've got lots of bears also in the precious metal sector trying to talk that market down. I will just watch with interest, but I think that we're closer to prices that are attractive. I'll put it this way: maximum risk that I see from 1,200 is $200 to the downside. Well, that's a big move if you're long. But the move to the upside over the next few years, I think, is potential is higher. And we will see. I'll leave that there. What about currencies in this environment overall? Well, most governments don't really want well, I would say virtually all governments do not want an outstandingly strong currency, because that just compounds their economic problems during a slow growth period. But some countries can withstand a stronger currency better than others, and I think that on a short-term basis, until the global economy is clearly on a stronger footing, I think that all governments will resist any significant appreciation in their currencies. And some governments need a generally soft currency more than others. The Fed is quite anxious to keep the dollar under wraps for a while longer. They'll probably succeed in doing that, but overall, the long-term charts suggest that we're just seeing the dollar range in a type three, in other words, churning time and size. Actually, there's less churning, it's quiet, but plenty of time and size. And before eventually getting a clearer overall recovery. In contrast, you have the Japanese yen, which the Japanese are very interested to weaken further. And they have not had too much of an outcry, or have not received too much of an outcry. And we therefore are likely to see the yen move somewhat lower. It's done that here today. It's fallen to 105.16 against the US dollar, and I think a move to 110 is the minimum that I would expect in the in the next few months. And I think Europe would not be helped by a stronger euro here overall. And the Bank of England, I think possibly a little bit pessimistically, has said that they felt that the UK economy would be harmed by a stronger pound. Well, we will see, but sterling is steady this year against most currencies. The currencies that are really weak are things like the Thai baht, Indonesian rupee, Philippine peso here right now, and that's another good reason to avoid those markets. The Indian rupee, the central bank is determined to keep it in a 62 to 60 rupee range against the US dollar. And they are having some success with that so far, but it's early days yet. It's an interesting overall background. Well, I don't want to run on too long, and I thank you again for your interest. I hope you'll have a look through the chart library when you get bored with too much free time, too much holiday time, if that's possible. But the library, in my own opinion, and seconded by an email that I received today, is actually better than the old library was. But I emphasize that we've we haven't reached the finished product as far as we're concerned by a long shot, and we want to make that library something really special because that will be of enormous help to subscribers. And it's been an achievement that we've always wanted, and now we've got the partners to actually help us to achieve that. And so, all the best to all of you. Continue to enjoy your holidays. And next broadcast, of course, on Monday. Good night.